Chapter 14. The Baker of Montalban. Henry was the first to awake the next morning, and lay lazily regarding the surrounding objects with such a feeling of rest as he had not known for weeks. Not one, not even Marie, knew all that he had feared and suffered for the last 2 or 3 days. He was, perhaps, the only one of the five who fully realized the difficulties and dangers of their journey, and he had had graver fears for his little brother than he had ventured to put into words, even to Marie. But now, whether it was the effect of bodily and mental exhaustion, or the rest of being once more under a roof which he instinctively felt was safe and friendly, he could feel nothing but content and thankfulness as he lay there in the warm, bright morning, with the early sunlight striking through the unglazed lattice. Gloom and he were alone. Mary had entreated that Louis should be in the same room with herself, and Leonore had made no objection, so that there was no small suffering face on the pillow beside him to recall anxious thoughts. After a time he got out of bed, and guessing by the light and silence of the street that it was still early, he proceeded to dress leisurely, and with as little noise as possible, so as not to wake Gloom. It was not long before there began to be a stir outside, and heavy steps, evidently those of the baker and his wife, went down the stairs. Gloom awoke, rubbed his eyes, and seeing Henry half-dressed, sprung out of bed with a sudden fit of energy. "You need not hurry," said his brother, laughing. "It is quite early, and I do not think we shall start again today." "Do you know who these people are?" asked Gloom, stopping short in his dressing. "No, except that they are of the Reformed religion, and by trade he is a baker." "How wonderfully good everyone has been to us," said Gloom thoughtfully. "Yes," answered Henry in a low tone, "God has been with us all the way." They finished dressing in silence after that, and then Henry went to see if the girls were ready. He met the baker's wife coming out of their room. "Bonjour, monsieur," she said pleasantly. "You are early astir, but the coffee is ready downstairs." "Is my sister, are the young ladies dressed?" asked Henry. "Monsieur will find his sisters ready to descend, but for the young monsieur, his brother, I have begged Madame Zwella to let him have coffee upstairs and remain in bed for a while." Henry pressed on into his sister's room. He had quite grown to look upon Leonore in that light, and he was anxious about Louis. However, the little fellow looked very well and happy in his fresh, clean bed, but owned that he was very tired and would like to be left upstairs. So the four others went downstairs and won the good people's hearts completely by their pleasant, respectful manners and gratitude for the kindness shown them. The rolls were all made and sent out already, but there were still some cakes to see after, and the young ladies begged to be allowed to help. The two boys at first stayed to watch, but after a little while Henry slipped away to see after Louis. He opened the door very carefully in case the child was asleep, and at first he thought it was so. Louis was lying back with his eyes shut. He was very much flushed, and his breathing came quick and short. "Louis," said Henry softly. Louis turned round with a quick, restless movement and opened his large blue eyes, but they had a strange, vacant look. "Henry," he said vaguely, not looking at his brother, "is it time to go on again already?" "No, Louis," answered Henry very tenderly, though he felt very much alarmed. "We are going to rest today." "Rest, rest, murmured the little fellow, turning back again. When is Mama coming? Do you want Marie, dear? I will go and call her. Mama, too, Mama, insisted Louis. Henry slipped quietly downstairs and went to look for Madame Argent. As he had discovered that her hostess was called, he found her in the parlor, where she did most of her light cooking, cutting some potatoes into strips to fry for the dejeuner a la fourchetta. She smiled and nodded to Henry and asked what she could do for him. "I am grieved to disturb you, madame," began Henry, "but if you could come up for a moment to look at my brother, I am afraid he is going to be ill." She looked at him sharply for a moment and then said gently, "He is that already, monsieur, but come, let us see what we can do." She went upstairs at once, followed by Henry. Louis lay just in the same position and did not look up at their approach. Madame Argent felt his pulse and the palm of his hand, upon which he roused himself to ask faintly for water, and seemed revived when Henry gave him some. "I am so tired, Henry," he sighed as he fell back again. "Is Marie asleep?" "No, dear. Do you want her? Ask her to come and sing to me, please." They went down again, and Henry paused to ask anxiously what Madame thought of his brother. "Oh, he will do well enough, I hope," she answered cheerfully. "He is just altogether worn out, that is all, and no wonder. Please God, a few days' rest will set him all right again." A few days. The words were enough in themselves to make Henry very thoughtful as he went in search of his sister. She came at once and was shocked and alarmed to see the change which an hour or two had apparently wrought in their little brother. She and Henry, with occasional visits from the other two, spent the day with him, much of it in absolute silence, as Louis fell into restless sleep. There was no talk of going on that day, nor the next, which was passed much in the same way. On the third day he seemed much better, was quiet, and able to think and talk clearly. He even spoke of going on, and declared that he should be quite well enough to do so tomorrow. "What do you think, madame?" said Henry, following her into the garden alone that evening. "Will it be too soon? Time is so very precious to us."
"So is the life of Monsieur, your brother, I should hope," exclaimed the good woman, almost angrily.
Henry gasped, as if he had been struck. "His life? You told me you did not think there was any danger, madame," he exclaimed. "Nor is there, so long as he lies quiet in bed. But if you take him up now, and set him to walk 10, 5, even a mile a day, écoute, his life is not worth that," with an expressive snap of her fingers. "The poor little fellow," she added with half-sob, which Henry did not hear in his consternation.
"What are we to do?" he said at length.
"I will tell you what you must do," she exclaimed suddenly, turning round upon him. "But stay, I can explain nothing without my Louis. If Monsieur will wait one moment." She vanished as she spoke into the house and came back in a moment with the burly, good-natured man, who looked, as on the former occasion, much embarrassed by his wife's vigorous measures. "Tell him, tell the young Monsieur, mon ami," she cried with the same sob in her voice. "Tell him what you and I settled last night." Monsieur Argent fidgeted and seemed uncertain how to begin, while Henry waited in dreary astonishment. "Monsieur sees," he said at length, "that it has pleased God to afflict us, that we have no child."
But we had one, the angel, broke in his wife, a little Louis, just the age of the little Monsieur when he died of the sweating sickness.
Monsieur Argent bowed in grave assent to his wife's speech and continued, "Therefore, as it seems a matter of great importance to Monsieur that he should reach Amsterdam without delay, and as one sees clearly that the little Monsieur will not be able to continue his journey for some weeks, months," put in his wife. And with the same grave bow of assent, he proceeded, "My wife and I are hoping that Monsieur will see fit to entrust his little brother to our care until such time as it shall please God that they may rejoin each other in safety."
Having delivered himself of his speech, Monsieur Argent heaved a deep sigh and looked at his wife for approbation. Henry was thunderstruck. "Leave Louis with you?" he stammered. "It is impossible. He would break his heart."
"He has too much spirit for that," cried the good wife indignantly. "Ah, Monsieur, believe me, none can so fitly care for a child as a mother, even if the child be noble and the mother of the people."
"Indeed, I meant nothing of that sort," exclaimed the lad hastily. "I only meant, pardon me, madame, I do indeed see how kind you are, but it cannot be. We cannot spare our Louis."
Madame Argent would have begun fresh explanations and entreaties, but her husband, with a tact rare in a man of his stamp, signed to her to be silent and drew her away.
"You will think of it, Monsieur," he said in departing, "for the sake of Monsieur's brother, I would pray him to do so."
They went indoors again, and Henry wandered down the little garden in the sweet warm twilight of early autumn, through the orchard where the fruit trees bent beneath their glowing burden, down to the little rivulet which flowed murmuringly at the end of the orchard. He stood there on the brink, unconscious of everything around him, not even capable of connected thought, while the words seemed to echo in his mind, "If you take him away, he will die." But how to leave him behind? His little Louis, the pet and darling of the family, whose future life he and Marie had so often fancifully imagined together, and without whom they should all feel lost. How to leave him with these people? Very good people, doubtless, but still only a baker and his wife, whom they had only known 3 days. He was just repeating to himself that it was impossible when he heard his name softly called, and the next moment Marie stood beside him, with her dark eyes shining in the dim light as she looked up in his face.
"Henry, is anything the matter?" she said in a startled tone.
"When I came downstairs just now to find you, Monsieur and Madame Argent were talking in the parlor. Madame was crying, and when I asked her for you, she said, 'He is in the garden, Madame Suella. Go and persuade him to do as we have said. It is the only way to save the little Monsieur's life.'"
"What does it mean, Henry? What does she want you to do?"
"She wants us to leave Louis behind to be brought up with them," answered Henry, hoarsely and abruptly. Marie started with a frightened gasp.
"Oh, Henry, must we really?"
"Must?" echoed the boy. "Can we give him up? We, who have promised to stand by each other to the last? I cannot do it, Marie."
"But, Henry," suggested Marie timidly, "if we ought, what do you think Mama would wish us to do?
Do you think she would like him to be brought up as a baker's son?" asked Henry bitterly. "He, a de Saint Croix of Saint Croix,
to be known as Louis Argent and run the streets with the Canilla of Montalban?
These good people would never let him do that, answered Marie, with a little hush of indignation.
See you, they never forget that we are noble, and they will take care that Louis does not learn bad ways.
And as for the rest, I think our father would say that a true noble would never forget his birth, and that it was not what he was obliged to do, but what he was himself that mattered.
Why, Henry, have we not ourselves been wandering like beggars for the last 3 weeks?
And do we feel ourselves a whit less noble?
We know it is only a means to an end, muttered Henry. We are on our way to the land where we shall be able to resume our right place. But to leave Louis here,
they did not mean to keep him away forever? They would let us send for him when we could? Questioned Marie eagerly.
So they say, but who can tell when that will be? Answered Henry bitterly.
If it may never be, then it will be because something has happened to us, suggested Marie softly.
Would he not be more out of harm's way to appear as the child of a baker, whom few, it seems, know as belonging to the Reformed religion, and all respect?
So you would be content, cried the lad, turning almost savagely upon her. You would let him go, our little Louis, and go on just as happily as if he were not with us.
Henry! The anguish of that faint cry struck Henry to the heart as her hand slipped from his arm, and Marie sunk down in a burst of bitter weeping. He knelt down by her, covering her with caresses and pouring out self-reproaches for his unkindness. Marie's tears, once yielded to, were difficult to check, but she tried hard and looked up at length with a bright April smile.
"Let us leave it to Louis himself," she said. "He is no baby now, and it is only fair he should have some say in it."
"Very well," said Henry at once. "We will leave it to him, but not tonight, Marie. Do you think so?"
"Oh, no. We will not disturb him tonight," said Marie. "He might not sleep after it, and it is getting late."
As she spoke, they heard Leonore calling them and saw her white dress coming through the darkness. Gloom was with her, and they seemed full of fun and laughter.
"Louis is fast asleep," said Leonore as she came up. "So Gloom and I, it came out to look for you. What are you discussing so soberly this beautiful night?"
The light question met with an answer for which the speaker was little prepared. Henry gravely told them what had been proposed for the little one. Leonore was furious at the notion. She scouted the idea of Louis's life being in danger and declared it was all a plot of these people, a scheme to get him for their own, and was Louis to be sacrificed to such meanness? She went on, till Henry himself was fain to take up the defense of the good people who had so kindly sheltered them. Gloom listened in perfect silence, without even an exclamation of surprise. Marie slipped her hand into his, and he kept it there, but gave no other sign of feeling. They scarcely noticed how late it was growing, till Monsieur Argent himself came down the orchard path, and with much hesitation submitted to Monsieur that it was getting late, when people had to rise early for the rolls. Henry rose at once, and they all went in to bed.